This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's time to raise your game with me, Angeline Tay. And we have Shankar Santharam from EQTD Consulting back with us today, continuing the success consciousness. And today we're focusing on a confident attitude makes a big difference.
Huge difference.
Huge difference. Yeah. You know, no matter what happens, I can handle it. And that's really a good motto in life, right? Mm. And nearly all successful people from all walks of life tend to have this approach. But, you know, besides that, what do all successful people have?
Well, they do. Most successful people that I have worked with, and I've worked with quite a lot, right down from here. Let's take BFM itself. I mean, you know, I've been guesting on the station for the last, I don't know, since 2009. So my math's a bit poor.
Eight years.
8 years since pretty much the time you opened on and off. And I've worked with some very interesting people here, of course, with Frida and yourself and everyone at the Enterprise Belt. But I've also worked with your managing director, Malik, for example. He's an example of a very successful entrepreneur who's had multiple lifestyles and lifestyles here, work-wise, I mean. Similarly, in the work that I do as a coach, as well as a training consultant and a management consultant, I get to meet a lot of people. And when I first started my career years ago as a consultant in 2002, 15 years ago, because I was not known in the market and I was only in my early 30s at the time, the type of clientele that I got were very small companies. So your large multinationals and GLCs and GLICs and so on and so forth were not really wanting to take a punt with me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they looked at me and thought, hey, you have no track record. You're new and you're young. So really, you want to consult us? You know, so there was that kind of
attitude.
So I was cheaper than everyone else because I needed to get into the marketplace. And this meant that I had openings, for example, with lots of small companies. And it was absolutely an eye-opener for me because only small companies took me because they wanted someone cheap, which is me at the time. I'm not cheap anymore, but then I think. When you go into a smaller organization, you get a complete window into the operations, you know, the way the leader thinks, the way they, how they're able to cascade the fire that they have and ignite the people around them. Say, for example, here at BFM, coming back to my first example of Malik Ali here, 2009, when they first started, it was a much smaller organization. You have about 60, 70 people, almost 100 people, multiple projects running at the moment. But it was a very kind of, you know, bootstrapping, cash-strapped organization when it first started. So when I started guesting here at the time, it was very interesting seeing how this business was run. And you get a real insight into someone who has no idea what they're doing, but has the confidence to say that I back the idea in that sense. You know, when I say no idea, meaning a lot of entrepreneurs have an idea of what they want.
Mm.
They say, yes, I think this is going to work because I'm providing a solution, because that's essentially what entrepreneurship is. Entrepreneurship is, an entrepreneur is not someone who just wakes up with an idea and says, I'm going to try and make this work. But an entrepreneur is someone who looks at a problem and says, I need to offer a solution. Therefore, there is a marketplace for me.
Yeah.
And often that solution is a new solution and it's not a tried and tested solution. You just committed to the solution, essentially. You just say, yeah, this is going to work. This is what I'd like to do. I think if I do this, this is going to work. And it's going to provide a great solution for a whole range of people. And you go in with this attitude of, I'm going to do this to make this work because it's going to solve problems. But you don't really know how you're going to do it.
Because it hasn't been executed.
Hasn't been done before.
It's just an idea.
Absolutely. So you just go in there blind as a bat most of the time, just armed with passion, you know, that thinking that this is going to work. And this attitude of confidence is the only thing that actually makes these people reach fruition at some point. Because if not, you're going to fail miserably along the way, because that great idea that you have is bound to fail, right? Because the inner workings, the mechanics of making, crystallizing an idea is always really hard. It's virtually impossible to crystallize an idea without failing.
That's why they say ideas are cheap.
Very cheap. Ideas are a dime a dozen. You take a stone and you'll hit someone with a great idea. But you don't always get people who are successful in making these ideas a reality. It's only the people who have that confident attitude who actually do that. It's almost like a magic mechanism. Some of these people who are successful have just learned this. At first, I used to think, right, Angela, I used to think that this is just a sort of dogged self-belief that, you know, nothing is going to faze me and I'm going to succeed at anything. And then I thought, no, there's some magic formula these guys have. They've learned some trick or, you know. But then as I've gone along in the last 15 years, I've realized that actually the original thought, this magic potion, there's no such thing as the magic potion. It's just a self-belief.
Self-belief. Yeah. And that's confidence, right?
Absolutely.
But then there's also a difference between someone who's really confident and, I guess, confident with like the entrepreneurs they have, right? Yeah.
There is. I mean, you know, you need to be able to withstand the tempestuous nature of business or life, going from failure to failure without losing enthusiasm. I think that's what Winston Churchill defined success as, going from failure to failure without losing enthusiasm. Mm. And that essentially is what I find that the best entrepreneurs in the world have, this ability to go from failure to failure without losing enthusiasm.
Is that what makes them different?
Makes them completely different, because what happens to mere mortals, the rest of us, is that we get really demoralized. We get quite, you know, ashamed of our failures. We become affected deeply and troubled and traumatized by our failures, that we don't want to try new things. Most entrepreneurs I know and most successful people I know have what you and I might call a very thick skin. You know, they fail and they get up and they say, oh, that's right, I'll just brush off my issues and I move along. But it's not as simple as that. That's the difference between the people who are successful and people who are not.
Okay.
And you also meet a lot of people who just fail and then start something else again.
Right.
Keep failing and starting, but constantly failing.
Mm.
This is because they don't learn.
Okay.
Yeah. A strong entrepreneur or a strong leader or a good successful business person, or a good successful person essentially in pretty much all parts of your life, not necessarily just in work or in business, but also in life. You know, many people I know, actually maybe I should rephrase that, not many people I know. I know some people who on their second marriages, for example, who seem to have mastered the art of being married second time round. You know, they fail miserably in the first round and then they got better the second time round. I also know people who are equally bad. Second time around, they should not have got married again. You know, it's just an absolute disaster. It's like moving from one disaster to another. And I think the difference is you are going to be the same if you take whatever bad behavior and bad attitudes you had in your first marriage and you bring it across your second marriage. You expect someone else to be different. If you don't change,
the problem's going to be
the problem is going to remain the same.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what happens. The best marriages, the second time around, the best marriages, the ones where the protagonists actually learn from the mistakes and go like, hey, last time around I did this and this is how I pushed and this is why I wasn't good at what I did in the marriage and now I learn. And I think that's the difference. Going from failure to failure without losing enthusiasm is predicated on you actually learning from failure to failure as opposed to just lurching from one crisis to another, not learning anything. And accepting the fact that your life is going to be full of crises.
Ooh, you know? Okay. Well, but what are the other real life experience, you know, that you can give us?
Well, I think one of the most, I have to look back at my own life and I want to, you asked me for a real life experience. And I just came back from Penang last weekend. I come from Penang originally. And it was very interesting. I met my school friends and we're all 46 now. So we left school almost 30 years ago after Form 5. You know, it was a long time and we've all got balder and grayer and fatter and sicker and all sorts of other things. But we've also become quite, it's like a motley crew of people that we met with, that I went to school with. It's one of those things in life where you meet school friends, people who you went to school, you did your O-levels, your Form 5, SPM, you know, MCE exams or SPM exams at the time. And then we all move on and we become successful or unsuccessful or whatever in our lives, right? And one of the things I noticed when I met these guys is they're the only group of friends that I have that when I meet them, I kind of morph back into a 17-year-old child. And I have absolutely no shame in talking nonsense. I am not... some may say I'm talking nonsense around, but you know, but my wife might say that. But I have no shame in doing that because it's a group of friends that you knew when we were all kind of nothing, growing up and experimenting with life. And this attitude of confidence that I think that I have, which I think I have, I mean, the work that I do requires a tremendous amount of confidence. You find that a lot of people who went to good schools schools that gave you a platform to become confident grew up through their teenagers and then as early adulthood and throughout life having that confidence, which is why there are some schools that stand out in Malaysia, for example. Mm. You will find that quite a lot of entrepreneurs went to just a handful of schools. They went to schools like in Kuala Lumpur, like the Victoria Institution, the St. George, St. John School. That's the one, the Prime Minister, I think, went there. Mm. And then Asunta,
SBI as well.
SBI, Victoria. Anderson School in Ipoh and the Penang Free School. And as much as it pains me, the St. Xavier School in Penang. The English College in Johor Bahru. St. George's School in... these are all boys' schools. There are also female schools. The Treasure Methodist School, the King Edward School in Taiping, St. George's Girls' School in Penang, Penang Chinese High School. These are all schools that I think instill a sense of confidence in young people, you know? Yeah. I just saw David Chu waving at me from outside saying that I mentioned St. Xavier's. It's not as good as the Penang Free School, but, you know, a good school nonetheless. So these are the schools that I think set you up for life. And I think going to the right school at the early stage sets you up.
And you went to Penang Free School,
yes,
right?
Yes,
so we'll find out more how Penang Free School influenced your life after this short messages. So stay with us. This is Raise Your Game with Shankar Santharam from EQTD Consulting, BFM 89.9.
Balanced Frank Medium, BFM 89.9.
And we're back on Raise Your Game, and you're right, behind every famous man is confidence, right?
Absolutely. Every famous man.
All right. Today we're talking about a confident attitude that makes a big difference on the series of Success Consciousness with Shankar Santharam from EQTD Consulting. On the line of confidence, and it's also, you know, attitude, right? You know, when does someone form this attitude of working hard? You know, whether does this come from home? Does it come from school?
I think part of it comes from home. It depends on what kind of culture your family instills in you. But that whatever happens at home always has a two-pronged effect. One is you become like your folks, or you become the complete opposite of your folks. I think this essentially is what happens to most kids. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist. This is just a pseudo-science for me. It's just my observations, you know. Like in my own family... I find that my brother, for example, is much closer in his attitude towards life as my father is, whereas I am the complete opposite, possibly because he was happy to become my father and I was happy to rebel against my father. So I think this is essentially what happens at work, so at school, at home. Then you come to school. School is very formative. You spend a lot of time at school. School and university, school, college, university, you spend a lot of time at these places. School is very important. I think the lessons in life that your primary and secondary school offer you keep you in good stead for the rest of your life. When you go to university, it changes a little bit because it's who you hang out with. You know, who are the cool kids at university? Who are the people that you gravitate towards? And you gravitate towards them for a variety of reasons. You know, attractiveness comes in a package. Sometimes it's physical attractiveness. Sometimes it's just the fact that you enjoy listening to someone talk. I was attracted to very charismatic people at university. And I got drawn towards certain philosophies because of that. And also certain bad habits you pick up through that. So people influence you along the way. Now, the real crux of hard work comes with the reality of life, I think. When you come out to work and you suddenly find yourself not having enough money and no safety net because your folks are no longer paying for you, and that you would like the finer things in life, but you can't afford them, and how important those finer things in life are will make a huge difference. So where does this attitude of working hard come from? It comes from your purpose, like everything else that I say. So the entire Success Consciousness model is based on purpose, predicated on purpose. So you must be absolutely clear about what your purpose is. And that will actually determine. So if your purpose at the age of 25 or 26 is to explore the world and to try new things and to figure out where exactly your passion is or what exactly the options are for you, this is the best time to work in an organization for a year or two and then move on to somewhere else. Mm. Absolutely.
Right? Sounds like a good plan.
Sounds like a very good plan, yes. And then after you reach a particular age when you think that I have explored enough and I'm quite certain I'd like to go down a particular route, Then you start doing specialist stuff. You start focusing and fixing your mind in that particular direction, and you go in that direction. Now, where does working hard come from? If you choose a particular direction at work, and if that work is compelling, if that work is interesting, and if you see real value in that work, then you will find that naturally, automatically, you become quite connected with that. And if you have that connection, you work hard, because this question about working hard doesn't come into play at all if you're happy doing what you do, because then you'll do it constantly.
Yeah.
Right? The whole question of you're not working hard, or your peers or your colleagues or your bosses stand up and say you're not working hard, is when you're not connected with that job. Therefore, you're constantly thinking of skiving off and thinking of doing other things, mengular, as they call in Bahasa Malaysia.
You know, your job becomes a chore.
Absolutely. Right? Getting up in the morning, coming to work is such a cumbersome, tedious thing, you know, where everything gets exemplified. You know, it's a problem. I have reached a stage, you know, as I said, I'm 45, 46 right now, and a lot of people, 45, 46-year-olds think about retirement. I'm thinking of new businesses. I'm thinking of what I want to do with my life. It's because it excites me. I'm an excitement junkie at work, because if you're not excited about the stuff that you're doing, yeah, you're right, man. It becomes such a chore, you know. So I think this question about working hard, where does it come from? It comes from inside you. It doesn't come from any external source. The external sources perhaps prop you up, give you kind of a basis for doing things, you know, like your school does. Like, you know, Penang Free School taught me to – actually, Penang Free School didn't teach me to work hard. It because I didn't work very hard at school, because I wasn't that connected at school. I must be honest. I worked hard at the things that I was interested in, which is not my studies. I know friends who focus tremendously on sport. I know friends who have become, you know, eye specialists and doctors and so on, who were nerds at school and focused tremendously on their studies. I spent a long time and a lot of time in the debating society and the, you know, representing Penang Free School in elocution competitions and so on. And that's what I do for a living right now. I speak for a living.
Right.
You know, so I think when I talk about this attitude of working hard, it was just essentially the school gave me a foundation to ply my trade, to kind of figure out what I wanted quite at an early age.
You know? But also sometimes it helps when you are actively looking for a purpose or when you're engaged. Because I feel like there are also quite a number of students today, if you're talking about when you're in your school years, that they just have no idea. You know, they just go with the flow. Yeah. They don't want to, you know, participate in any societies or clubs. Why does that happen?
Well, because there's nothing that is compelling. If you walk around a shopping complex of an evening, late at night, in closing time, and you see 15, 16-year-olds loitering around. Why do these kids loiter around? In Johor Bahru recently, we had this case of these kids on bicycles who got plowed in by a car, and they are there. Now, what are these kids in search of? If you go to Dataran Merdeka of a Saturday night, late at night, you will see all the motorcycle races taking place, and primarily they are 17, 18-year-olds. What are they looking for? All of us, all of them, like us, are looking for something that excites us. So coming to school doesn't excite you for most people. Because, I mean, you know, I don't want to disrespect educationists, and I don't want to disrespect the school system in this country or anywhere else, but our entire school system, I believe, is outdated. It's an outdated modality. A couple of days ago, I was having a conversation with a whole range of friends I went to school, Penang Free School, with, who are all in their mid-40s like me, who have got, you know, children who are going to school. And this is the question that we were all talking about. Where do we send our kids to school? You know, do we want to send our kids here? Do we want to send them to private school? Why would we choose a private school? Yes, a private school offers a whole range of other things that, say, a national type school doesn't offer. But the cost of a private school means I go to work every day, I earn all the money I earn, and I only give it to my kids to go to school, and that's all my whole life becomes. Does that motivate me and compel me? I think we need to go back to a basic understanding of why people do what they do or why they don't do what they're supposed to do. There is no such thing as what you're supposed to do, right? Today, we've also reached a stage where work life is very different from, say, 20 years ago. When 20 years ago, you had to go to university or college, or you had to get a professional skill, and then you needed to go to work. You don't need to go to work anyway. You can work from home, essentially. Right? That's the first thing. You work from home. Secondly, a lot of kids want, you know, that flexibility and freedom. Gen Ys and the Gen Zs right now would prefer not to come to work and would prefer to sit in a coffee shop somewhere that has internet connection and work from there.
And with the rise of gig economy, right?
Absolutely. A lot of freelancers, you know, we spend so much of time talking about technology. You know, our 12 o'clock show immediately after this is Tech Talk, right? Or 1 o'clock is
Enterprise Biz Bytes.
Enterprise Biz Bytes and Tech Talk and so on and so forth. All of this is about technology and how technology has actually made work life completely different. So our school system is still kind of archaic.
Yeah.
Preparing kids to go
last century.
Yeah, going to university. So now you have, you know, 15, 16-year-olds who are completely living a different reality, whereas the school system offers them a complete different reality. Mm. So I'm disconnected with that. So I am completely disinterested in going to school. I'd rather do other things.
Right.
Which excite me, like becoming a matrampit, for example, because that excites me in some way. Or just wandering around and getting my bicycle and being a daredevil because I want to be Iron Man, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. I hope that answers that particular, yeah, you know, the quite train of thought that you have.
Mm.
You know,
and also coming back to confidence, right? So how does attitude and confidence then work hand in hand?
Mm. I think you're developing an attitude of confidence is important. I think once you have that compelling reason why you do something, say for example for me, I liked when I was at school, I liked debating and I liked elocution, I liked speaking, I liked the sound of my own voice, I think. Also, to be honest, I like the adoration, the adulation. It was nice, you know, being on stage and people clapping because I was funny, or people clap because, like, if you ask any comedian, why do they do what they do? I want to bring laughter to the world, because I also own the Crack House Comedy Club, which is co-own the Crack House Comedy Club with Rizal Van Gazel. I spend a lot of time with comedians, and I'm a real fan of stand-up comedy. The whole stand-up comedy thing, right? Why would you want to be a comedian? Oh, because I want to bring laughter to people. That's absolute nonsense. You're a stand-up comedian because you are in need of, you know, adulation and adoration. You want people to clap in. Because that's exactly what every stand-up comedian does. They come off the stage and then they come immediately, did I do well? Did I not? How was that? You know, and you feel a high when you did well, or, you know, in comedic parlance, when you killed on stage, as they call it. Mm-hmm. So you kill on stage or you die on stage. You kill means you've gone out there and you've killed. You've killed the set. You've done something. You've made it work. You know, die is when you die. On your bum, you know what I mean, on stage. And so this whole adoration, adulation is so important.
Mm.
Right? So we are in search of something. So this attitude and confidence comes from you creating an attitude of confidence. Now, why are you confident about something? Because you must be absolutely clear why you want to do something. What compels you to do something? Yeah.
Mm.
What drives you to get there?
Right.
And once you're quite clear about that, and then you feel, oh yeah, I can do this. I know why I'm doing this. I can do this well. So for me, it's cool. I like the adulation of being a public speaker, but I was also really, really scared. I was nervous about doing this. I'd get kind of, you know, I'd run to the toilet to throw up before I got on stage. So it's almost, you know, almost like punishing myself to get where I want to get to, which is really interesting because that nervousness, kind of, you know, adrenaline pumping, thumping, you know, your heart is coming out of your chest cavity before you go up on stage because there's a 100 or at school, 1,000 kids listening to you. And school is a very unforgiving place, right? So you get up on stage and you mess up. First, they'll call you names for the next 6 months and, you know, remember you. So the stakes are very high. You know, the stakes are really high. So you got to do it right, right? So there's nervousness, there's fear. Then you get up on stage and then you find that 1,000 kids at Penang Free School are all roaring your name because you've done really well. Now, all that pain you felt, that nervousness you felt before has gone. So now that confidence. So competence actually increases your confidence.
Right.
So the most important point I'm trying to make is, as difficult as things are, as hard as things may be, keep at it. You know, keep doing it repeatedly. If you like it, you may not like the process of doing it, but at the end, the confident attitude that you have at the end, it's like losing weight. You need to actively lose weight at the beginning. Right, so that you begin to look different. The moment you look different, that gives you this confidence. So when you see the food in front of you and you want to flip back to your old habit, all you remember is like, look at me now, man. I'm looking pretty decent. So carry a little phone with a camera and look at yourself. Do a selfie immediately and go like, dude, you're looking good. So let's not eat anything else.
Mm.
So now this is hard. Not eating at that point is really hard, right? When you're trying to lose weight.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You need a compelling reason to do it.
Mm.
So it could be the way you look, it could be your health, it could be the way you feel, it could be that you're going to the beach next week, you know, and you're going, it could be that you're meeting your 46-year-old friends again after 20 years and we're all going to take our shirts off and I don't want to have a pot belly.
Oh, that's why you've lost weight.
That's exactly why I've lost weight. That's the only reason. So okay. That attitude is predicated by confidence is predicated by competence.
So finally, just one last question, right? So one thing that you learned when you were in Penang Free School, and you think that's something that, you know, resonated with everyone else, you know, to learn your lesson.
Very interesting about Penang Free School, yeah. It was a school, it was very difficult to get into Penang Free School at that time when I was in the 1980s, early 80s. So there were feeder schools, 20, 30 different schools, primary schools, and every school had about 10, 15, 20 spaces. So I remember when I was in Standard 6, when I was 12, my father made it a point to tell me that, you know, you need to get into this school. It's the best school in Penang. Best government school in Penang. There were private schools. And we didn't come from a wealthy family, so we couldn't go into a private school. Oh, my parents decided that the money was better spent elsewhere, you know, not sending me to a private school, for example. So the attitude that was instilled in me was that you need to get to that school. So because of this kind of funneling in of getting to the school, every kid that got to the school, suddenly when they got there, thought, wow, this is the best school in the world. Mm-hmm. I know it's also the oldest school in Malaysia, formed in, you know, which celebrated our 200th anniversary last year, the 21st of October, 1816, so 200 years old. So suddenly you feel like you're in this big. Then you see all these doyens, you know, people who've actually come from the school, from the first prime minister of Malaysia, Tunku Abdul Rahman, went to the school. Right. So that, you know, so you suddenly feel like I'm in a great school. Confidence, and then you sing the national, you sing the state anthem every day, and then you sing the state anthem, you sing the school anthem every day, and the school anthem says, "Let us march on to fame, let the aisles proclaim till our anthem will dare us to do, let us onward to win till, you know, new laurels gain, free school for the brave and for the true." If you keep singing that twice a week for 5 years, get stuck in your head. Free school for the brave and for the true. It's very American, you know what I mean? You know, this whole star-spangled banner, you know, land of the free and home of the brave or whatever they call in themselves, which is why they have this attitude of confidence. So that school, Penang Free School, offered me that tremendous attitude of confidence as I was growing up, because free school for the brave and for the true. Mm. That was very interesting. I met a group of friends this weekend. You know, I have friends. I have some really, really interesting friends, yeah? People who become ophthalmologists. I've got Alvin Ang, for example, is an accomplished writer who wrote a book called Barefoot Leadership. I went to school with him. Andrew Lim, who is an ophthalmologist in Penang. I've got people who work in Dell. I've got people who work in Shell. I've all these huge companies, yeah? People who do very, very well. And when we all sit together, we fall back to being 17-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Goofing around with a motley crew of kids that, you know, get back together. But we've all done really well professionally in our lives. And that's because that school has instilled this feeling of fearlessness. And no matter what happens to you, even if you fall, get up and move forward. Right. And I think that's an attitude that I'd like to instill, if you know, in kids today. Mm. That they, you know, it's for the brave and for the true. You need to get out there and do things.
Okay. Well, we should find out more about the anthem of this school. So thank you so much for your time, Shankar Santharam from EQTD Consulting. And we've been talking about success consciousness, a confident attitude that makes a big difference. Well, thank you for your time. Raise your game. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.